And welcome back. You know, for many decades, St. Louis has had a reputation as a major labor town. The Teamsters, United Auto Workers, and other unions had a very solid presence and influence here. As has been the case in many major cities, as many manufacturing jobs have melted away, union membership has too. The Right to Work movement has been active in seeking to minimize the traditional methods of labor to organize in the workplace. Half the states have right to work laws. Illinois is not a right to work state. Missouri is not one of them yet. There is an active campaign to change that. St. Louis Public Radio's Joe Manis joins us to talk about what's going on here. Joe, specifically, before we talk about right to work, I mentioned in this introduction that St. Louis has always been a very, very strong labor town. No disagreement there.
Yes, it has. There. In some ways, St. Louis is like the northern city of Missouri. I mean, St. Louis has always been a bit more like East Coast, northern leaning. Yeah. Whereas Kansas City was more a little bit more west, southern leaning. So, yeah, that's true. Very true. St. Louis has always been a strong labor town. Now, I just want to give a couple quick stats to kind of put all this in perspective. Union membership in Missouri right now is actually on the low end. It's a little over 8% of the overall workforce. Now, at the peak, 25 years ago, it was almost double that. About 15%. Nationally, it's a little under 12%. All workers who are members of unions in Illinois, it's about 15%. The reason, and in the St. Louis area, it's a little higher than the state average because outstate, the union membership is much lower than 8%. So I'm trying to give that bit of a backdrop to the fight that's going on. There's also another fact that I wanted to sort of straighten out. One of the big fights over the right to work debate is whether or not pay is higher or lower in right to work states. Labor unions say it's lower. Some of the advocates of right to work say it's higher. Now, according to the Department of Labor, the average pay in right to work states is close to 10% lower than in non-right to work states. But a lot of that percentage can be accounted for in the difference in cost of living because many of the right-to-work states are southern states and other states that traditionally have lower wages. When you take the cost of living into effect, it's more like a 3% difference. Now, right-to-work advocates actually, led by the Heritage Foundation and some other conservative groups, point to states such as Indiana, which had not been a right-to-work state until a couple of years ago. And they're looking at figures that show that pay has increased slightly in Indiana since it became a right-to-work state. Now, whether or not that's because of that, I'm not going to say, but they're using that as to challenge the labor figures. So this is just to kind of put all this in perspective.
Sure. What is it that right-to-work advocates want, and what is it that the opponents object to?
Okay. Under right-to-work, employers and unions would be barred from requiring workers to pay union dues or fees if a majority vote to organize. Now, an employer does not have to go by this anyway. So there are some union shops where they don't have that. Other union shops, the employers have agreed so that everybody who's in a union in an employment facility pays some fees. Now, under a Supreme Court decision of several decades ago, the Beck decision, any percentage of the union dues that's used for political purposes can be excluded. So you could, if you're a worker, let's say in a place, let's say a GM plant or something, and you have to pay the dues, but you can say, well, I don't want to pay the political part because technically I don't want to really be a member. I'm just doing it because I have to. They have to slice that percentage off. So under right to work, nobody would be required to pay the dues.
Some people are calling it the freedom to work movement.
Yes. Yeah. And then you've got labor people who say, well, but it means that you're going to have a lot of freeloaders. You're going to have people who don't want to pay the dues because they wouldn't automatically come out of their paychecks, which is the way most places handle it now.
This is very active in Missouri right now, needless to say. And tell us about the legislation that Governor Nixon is going to be thinking about over the next couple of days before the veto session.
Okay. Now, last session, legislative session, was the first time that the General Assembly in Missouri passed a right-to-work law. Now, this law, as passed, not only would bar these closed union shops, as they're generally called, it also would impose penalties and potential jail time for employers who did not go along with that. So in other words, if there was a deal between an employer and a union that they are going to pay the fees and somebody challenged it, or if they didn't change it as soon as the law went into effect, they could face jail time or fines. That's one of the reasons that the governor cited when he vetoed the bill over a month ago.
There is a veto-proof majority in the Missouri legislature now. The veto session is to override the veto.
Correct.
Is it likely that they will vote to override?
It's going to be complicated. In the House, they were close to 20 votes short of a veto-proof when they passed the bill. One of the things I want to emphasize, St. Charles County is going to be crucial in this. St. Charles County is a Republican-leaning county, but it has a lot of union members in it. Union members don't always vote Democratic, but there's a lot of union members and union retirees who live in St. Charles County. So the result is many of the legislators, the State House and Senate from St. Charles County, even though they're Republicans, have voted against right-to-work legislation. So that voting block in itself is a major part of this 18 or so that they need in the House to override the governor. House Speaker Todd Richardson has not said, I've asked several times, has not said yet whether or not he's going to bring it up. Generally speaking, a speaker doesn't bring up a bill unless they're pretty sure they have the votes or they're under some pressure from donors or whoever to bring it up. You have some Republican donors who are very actively supporting right to work and who want a vote, because even if it doesn't pass the House, they want to know who they can finger.
Right. We've heard this song before. I mean, this is an issue that keeps coming up. Voters in, I guess it was 1978, turned down a right to work proposal.
Correct. And for a long time after that, legislators didn't want to deal with the issue because of that. In fact, Kit Bond, who I've talked to a couple times about this, he contends that the 1978 vote just riled up labor, and he thinks it actually hurt the Republican Party for a long time. That's what his contention was, and he thought it had been pointless. Now, again, there are some Republicans who really feel that, A, this is important on a philosophical level, and there are some business people who really believe that this would help the state as far as to attract more business, because some of them say some businesses looking at Missouri automatically say no because it's not a right-to-work state. Now, I want to emphasize, individual companies could still say they don't want to require everybody to pay dues, and that would be a deal, negotiations between the company and the union to decide that. Right-to-work would mean they couldn't even consider it.
Only about a minute and a half left. My recollection is that in recent decades, a number of companies, prestigious companies, have left or not come to Missouri because and left for right-to-work states.
In some cases. Now, in other cases, especially in the auto industry, because they're mainly in states that are not right-to-work, or it seems to be less of a crucial factor. But yes, there have been some companies, according to advocates, who they believe have not come to Missouri because of that. You've got some labor groups who say no, you can look at other businesses, and it's not a factor. And they point to certain sectors of the industries where they say, well, labor isn't that big in that industry anyway, so it wouldn't have any effect. So this is really – you've got some of the advocates who contend that even though Missouri's union workforce is low, it's about 8.5%, as I mentioned, they say that 8.5% are holding back everybody else. Then you've got the labor side who say, if we're only 8.5%, why are you bothering with us?
Right.
So that's the debate.
And of course, 8.5% diminishing, it decreases the clout that this particular block has in the state, needless to
say. Correct.
Now,
I want to emphasize, it's a higher percentage here in the St. Louis area, but it's lower than that outstate.
Okay. Well, Joe Manis, thank you once again. We'll watch. The special session comes up on the 16th. Is that the date?
Yes.
Okay, well, what's your bet?
I don't know. It's from what I'm hearing, it's close.
All right. Well, you'll keep us in touch, I'm sure. Joe Manis, thank you so much for being with us. That's the Right to Work story as it exists in Missouri at this time. We'll leave you now, but tell you that tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Julie Smith about the importance of teaching media literacy and how to evaluate the thousands of media messages we receive in today's digital world. We'll also take a look at librarian Gina Sheridan's new book and what she calls the 200 coolest, best, and most important books that you'll ever read. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.